The Pentagon announced last week that it plans to reduce the number of U.S. troops in Afghanistan to about 2,500 by January 20th. That would continue a drawdown of forces that's been happening since February, when about 12,000 troops were stationed in the country. The plan is part of a deal the U.S. struck with the Taliban early this year to open peace talks between the group and the national government. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was in Qatar this weekend to hold some of those talks, likely the last discussions held under the Trump administration. It's been a violent year in Afghanistan, and many in the country fear the Taliban will gain even more control if the U.S. continues to withdraw support. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the situation and the American troop presence in Afghanistan? Do you think it's time for American troops to get out of the country, maybe entirely, regardless of where things stand there? Or do you think we need to leave the country with a better chance at stability, if that's possible? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Saeed Khan is a senior lecturer in Near East and Asian Studies at Wayne State University in Detroit. Saeed, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back.
Saeed, for some time, U.S. troops in Afghanistan haven't been in combat mode as we know it. Can you talk about what their role has been recently?
Basically, the role for U.S. troops has been one to try to facilitate and in themselves also to engage in counterterrorism activities. There are still some vestiges of Al-Qaeda, but perhaps more problematically, there's always a concern that Afghanistan could be fertile ground for ISIS, or ISIL, as it's known. And given the rather dubious legacy of American involvement in Afghanistan, it was always considered to be prudent for there to be some kind of military presence there, especially in the backdrop of the kind of tensions that exist between the Taliban and a rather weak central government in Kabul.
This all started, the American troop presence there started after the September 11 attacks, with the notion, the reality that the Taliban had in effect given refuge to Al-Qaeda leadership back then. Now I understand the Trump administration and American negotiators are trying to get a deal where the Taliban will say, we won't provide a harbor to Al-Qaeda or a group like ISIS or things like that. How plausible does an agreement like that seem?
There is space for the Taliban to be able to make that pledge, but the Taliban understand that anything dealing with an Afghanistan government and also with Washington is a transactional relationship. And so Taliban is not going to simply make that pledge without getting something in return. And what they want is either greater say when it comes to the direction of Kabul's government, or at the very least having as much autonomy in the regions that it controls. So they can go ahead and hold this out as a bargaining chip when it comes to with whom they have relations, and particularly with those people that find themselves to be on the other side of American interests in the region.
There's a lot of concern, I understand, in Afghanistan. If the Taliban can take power again in the whole country, they're obviously, they have great influence a lot of the country now, that some reverses could be expected in terms of human rights, women's rights, things like that. What are the concerns there?
That's always going to be a concern when it comes to Afghanistan. Now, the Taliban don't have the manpower, nor do they have the kind of influence weapons that they could then be able to comprehensively take Afghanistan. There's simply too many different players that are at work there. However, at the same time, it also has to be recognized that the Taliban, whether one likes it or not, are a legitimate presence within Afghanistan. They are going to need to have a seat at the table. And right now, it seems as though the impasse when it comes to the negotiations with the Kabul government are over even agreeing on something as simple as a code of conduct. What is going to be the negotiation protocols that are used in their talks in Qatar? If the issue of human rights is going to be on the table, which it should, there is going to have to be a recognition of the Taliban refracting human rights through Islamic law. Now, all Islamic law, of course, is not something that is inimical to human rights or even women's rights, but it has to be seen as something that is homegrown within Afghanistan. It is an indigenous recognition and an indigenous agreement, not one that is necessarily being influenced by external forces there.
And there's been a lot of interest from external forces who have supported the Taliban over the years, including Pakistani intelligence agencies, wealthy investors, in effect, from Saudi Arabia. is that still a concern that these outside forces are, well, there are lots of them, are still playing a big role in supporting the Taliban?
Well, here again is one of the ironies, because along with, as you said, so the investors, Pakistani intelligence, Indian intelligence, there are plenty of different outside forces, as well as the United States. When it comes to the Saudis, it seems as though there has been a withdrawal of their expansion of influence in the region. A lot of that has to do with the fact that the country itself is trying to perhaps reinvent itself when it comes to the moniker of being the exporter of Wahhabism and Islamic fundamentalism. At the same time, Saudi Arabia is also now focusing much more inward to domestic reforms, trying to, in fact, promote tourism to the kingdom. In the case of Pakistan, what you have is the all-important China-Pakistan economic corridor, which is going to involve Afghanistan as well. So Pakistani intelligence forces are going to ensure that that is something that is kept front and center in their priorities and looking for stabilization in Afghanistan. As far as India is concerned, India's motivation is less regarded on matters of economics or really a concern for Afghanistan, but they see themselves as providing a counterweight to Pakistani influence there. So again, unfortunately, and not for the first time, Afghanistan is really the locus of external forces. It remains to be seen if it can provide for itself the kind of stability which will then repel many of these external actors from feeling as though they have the empowerment to engage there.
Talking to Saeed Khan from Wayne State University, looking at plans from the Trump administration to draw down the number of American troops, some more in Afghanistan amidst ongoing negotiations. Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Jake is with us in Appleton. Jake, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Jake?
You know, I just think it's a great opportunity as we draw down for Afghani men and women to really take the helm and, you know, gain some either political or human rights wins for the people. I think when we see an Afghani man or woman as the face of this change, I think it's going to inspire a lot of the community or the Afghanis to really start to see the change that's been made and the progress that's been made. And among other things, I know that we've had a lot of opportunity to provide resources, you know, both human and financial, to start helping and aiding their government to kind of resume things in a transition. So I think it's going to be a great opportunity to slowly, you know, let more and more of that influence take root. And I think there's going to be a lot more organic support for their government. And I think there's going to be a great change for the people to see that.
Jake, thanks a lot for calling in. And Saeed, that was the hope, I think, from the George W. Bush administration, the Obama administration, is that as the United States pulls out, the Afghan government and the Afghan people would be able to step up and fill any void that American troop presence had left behind. What do you think?
Well, I think, as Jake said, that is still the kind of cautious optimism by which all parties concerned are operating. This has been going on for a very long time, and American involvement, at least from 2001 on, was for a legitimate reason. This was the area where the Taliban was harboring al-Qaeda. It was not Iraq. And of course, for decades to come, people will analyze and assess whether the United States should have focused on Afghanistan, and perhaps that particular conflict could have ended a lot sooner than it has or still going on. The other thing to recognize is that this idea of agency of a very, very diverse Afghan political society needs to have the opportunity to germinate and to even make mistakes on its own, whether it is the government of Ashraf Ghani in Kabul, the Taliban, as well as other groups. Afghanistan is not a country with which we would have a very natural cultural understanding or frame of reference. You have large tribal ethos there. You have a weak central government, and you still have a lot of political differences when it comes to representation. What we understand as a democratic process is different in Afghanistan. There, they do have representational government, but it would certainly not be mistaken for being a Jeffersonian democracy. It should be allowed to organically develop. It is a country that has been through a tremendous amount dating well before 2001. In fact, going to the 1979 Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, in which the United States certainly played an indirect role in ending not only Soviet invasion there, but really bringing down the Soviet Union as a whole by 1989. Now we find that the challenge is really to allow the Afghans to create their own kind of political regime, and one that should be left to its own devices instead of having foreign intervention.
Right now, we're picking up our talk with Saeed Khan from Wayne State University, looking at the Trump administration's goal to reduce the number of troops in Afghanistan to about 2,500 by late January. You can join in with your thoughts and your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to our callers now. Franco is with us in Grand Marsh. Franco, hello.
Hi. Good afternoon. My question for your guest is, after all these years in Afghanistan, I'm just curious, why do you think it is that the U.S., the Western allies, and the Middle East countries haven't helped Afghanistan build up a really formidable army and Air Force so they can stand on their own and be independent? God bless.
Franco, thanks a lot for calling in. Saeed, that has been part of the goal for the U.S. and NATO allies in particular for a long time now, right?
Well, first of all, thank you for the question, Franco. The idea of building a standing army and an air force would be important if Afghanistan was threatened from outside. What we find is the case of Afghanistan is really something that is completely internal. And we find also that there are these various groups that have their own security forces, their own militias, their own mode of operating, whether it's the Taliban or the central government or various other tribal factions as well, such as the Northern Alliance. That's not the problem. There's plenty of weapons in Afghanistan. It's just that they're using them against one another. Now, at the same time, there have been occasions where external forces have then been, for their own needs of fighting some kind of a proxy war, been enabling and empowering and equipping various sides to this conflict. So what we find then is that if it is about Afghanistan coming together and getting stability, more military, more weapons is really not the solution to this. There needs to be security, but that security needs to be from one another. There has to be, for that, the real restoration of trust.
How do you do that? I mean, after all these years of Afghanistan at war, either with an external force like the Soviet Union or various versions of a civil war, how do you start to come back from that?
There's two things. One is that with the bilateral talks that are going on in Qatar, there needs to be a very strong statement made to all parties that have served as external forces, whether it is India, Pakistan, the United States, certainly Saudi Arabia, that Afghanistan should be hands off. Now, some of them have reasons which can be justified because of their own security reasons and priorities. And for others, it seems as though it's much more folly and to serve as a disruptive force. Once that is taken care of, then there also needs to be the building of trust among the Afghan factions themselves. When that happens and there is the incentivization that everybody is a stakeholder in Afghanistan, no one is going to be excluded or exempted from the process of building or rebuilding Afghanistan, there's a trust dividend that comes in naturally as a result of that. If this was as it was in the past, the exclusion of the Taliban, then it wouldn't be a surprise for them to take the kind of posture of resistance that they would, recognizing and sensing that Kabul was hostile to their interests as being Afghans, not some kind of external interlopers.
Thanks a lot for that call, Franco, at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Colleen calling from Sharon now. Colleen, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to ask about the state of women and girls in Afghanistan as the United States is leaving in regards to not only their participation in government and government rebuilding, but education, jobs, and their standing today.
Colleen, thanks for the call. Saeed.
Right. So the situation for women in Afghanistan is certainly not ideal. And in part, that has to do with the kind of instability of the government, instability in society. And part of that is also when it comes to economics. Now, there is a possibility that with the right kind of investment in Afghanistan, that the empowerment of women and human rights as a whole can improve. China is really, at this point, the main variable. With its Belt and Road Initiative, or the so-called Silk Road, that's going to extend from Beijing all the way to Europe, we see then the possibility that Chinese investment in Afghanistan can then help provide a kind of economic buoyancy for this completely landlocked country to then have within it a kind of an economic stability which can bring everybody forward. Part of the reason why women's rights are subdued in Afghanistan is because of the imbalance of education being available to everybody. Oftentimes, women are educated or they have access to education based not on matters of gender or culture, but because of socioeconomics, whereas large swaths of the population may not have access to those resources. So if there is that kind of an incentive that can be provided, and China, of course, doesn't like instability. So what they could probably do is, along with the kind of economic benefits and resources, they can also demand and receive a kind of stability within the society, which can then allow, and I assure you, it'll probably be a slow process, maybe a little bit slower than to which we are accustomed. But there is a possibility then that the situation for women can improve. It will probably be measured more in decades than in years, though.
Colleen, thanks for the call. We're talking to Saeed Khan from Wayne State University about Afghanistan and the U.S. troop presence there. Back to your calls. Jeff is with us in Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, good afternoon. I am very concerned about what is happening over there with the neighbors to Afghanistan, as well as the history of this war we've had in that country. And I think it's very much destabilized by the fact that for a time in Afghanistan, we got them to stop growing opium, which, you know, supplies drug addicts with heroin. And there's so much money in drug trade. I want to know what the guest thinks of how destabilizing drugs are in the culture of Afghanistan and what the future holds in that regard. Thank you.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Saeed, great question. The role of opium production in Afghanistan.
Well, I like the way that Jeff framed the question, so thank you, because the whole notion of destabilization is really in the eye of the beholder. Afghanistan itself would perhaps, and I don't want to speak for the entire country, but certainly one sector will contend that opium production, in fact, is not destabilizing. It provides some modicum of economic stability. What would be the best strategy in dealing with opium, particularly with its more adverse impact elsewhere in the world when it comes to heroin and the such, is to go ahead and provide a replacement crop. One of the big challenges is that opium grows quite well. There are other agricultural products that can be grown. And if there was an arrangement, for example, with China that is always looking for other areas that can be food producers, there can be then an incentivization to replace opium in the fields with something that would be more viable, and at the same time try to provide it with the same level of financial profitability. Now, that, of course, is a big issue, because given the fact that the opium trade is rather lucrative, so there will be some kind of an economic impact on Afghanistan. But if there can be, again, some kind of subsidies that are provided, some kind of long-term stability that can be offered in the financial sector, there is some hope that we can wean the country off the kind of dependency for a product which, like it or not, does provide some kind of economics for it.
Jeff, thanks a lot for that call. In our last minute or so, Saeed, what are you watching for as we make the transition to a new president in this country, a new Secretary of State, and the whole shebang? What are you watching for in this transition when it comes to Afghanistan?
So there's two things. One is whether or not withdrawal of the United States from the Middle East and from South Asia in by and large is going to continue. It seems as though the Biden administration is coming in with a couple of major priorities. One is to restore the transatlantic relationship that has really suffered over the last 4 years, particularly with NATO. Another priority, of course, is how to contain China, which is going to be difficult with the recent signing of the agreement, the RCEP, in with many Asian and Pacific Rim countries. Afghanistan is not going to be a very high priority, it seems, for the United States, but at the same time, it should not be neglected or ignored. We're paying the price for that happening in 1989, and we're paying the price of still, as yet, not having a very coherent strategic plan and policy for the country.
Saeed, thanks, as always, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Saeed Khan is a senior lecturer in Near East and Asian Studies at Wayne State University. He talked to us today about a plan to withdraw more U.S. troops from Afghanistan and ongoing peace talks between the U.S., the Taliban, and the Afghan government.